This program was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, Irirangi Tamotu, MPR. If you're enjoying this podcast in Manawatu, you could make your very own, just like this one. MPR exists to help people like you tell your story or share your passion on air and online. Check out mpr.nz for more information.
Welcome to Manawatu Conversations, recollections of the past and sometimes opinions about the future. Today we have with us...
Maurice Entwistle.
And Christine Entwistle.
Jane Bolton.
And I'm Stuart Burks. Now, Maurice, we've been talking about your early days, schooling and so on, and now we were getting onto issues on the farm. You left school about maybe 16, 17, went to the farm, but you'd already picked up some engineering skills from school, and they held you in good stead.
Yes, I did. It was an interest that I had, and still is for that matter. And I won a prize, it was a Tom Ragg metalwork class at high school, and I still have the prize here. It's a pair of vice grips. I don't often use them nowadays because they're getting pretty dilapidated.
Yeah.
But and after that, I, in later life, several of us used to go to Healy High School to do evening metalwork classes, and I used the metal cutting lathes and various other equipment there to advantage for myself. Further to that, I got involved with our next-door neighbours, the Richardson family, and who did hay baling and grain harvesting and general cartage around the district. And that family asked me if I would give them some help with mechanical repairs and various other things. In the process of all this, Ted French, their uncle, was my neighbour, and they were going to build a bridge, and Jim Dew, ex-Dew Electrical, was the person behind the project, and he was...
So this is a bridge on someone's farm?
It is, their farm. Yes.
Okay, yep.
It spanned the Kiwitia stream, one single span, and it's... Anyway... Ted French, their uncle, came to me one day and said, "I don't think they're doing the right thing, Maurice. Could you talk to them?" And I said, "Oh, yes, I suppose I could. What's the problem?" He said, "Well, I think they're going to pour a concrete abutment on the top of the riverbed, and I don't think it will stay there." He said, "I think they should be driving some railway lines or something similar into the bed of the river to try and anchor the abutment too." So I approached Bon Richardson, told him what Uncle Ted had said, and he said, "I'll speak to Mr. Jim," as he called him, Jim Dew, and he came back to me later and he said, "Morris," he said, "I think we all think that that's a good idea, and would you give us a hand to do it?" Which I agreed to, and we used Ted French's post driver, which had been made personally by himself, which was something to be seen, but worked. And we drove 20-odd railway lines at each end of the bridge to put the piers on, and full length, 20-odd feet, into the riverbed. The piers, concrete piers, Jim and some of the boys, Richardson boys, boxed up.
How could you drive them in? You do, the tractor was big, you could just...
Because of their height, one side was at riverbed level, so we had to use the tractor on a truck deck to drive them
right up
to get it high enough to sit on top of the railway line.
Okay.
And the other side was on a clay bank, which was probably 10 or 12 feet high, and you were able to do that off the bank. And then after that, in the riverbed.
Yeah.
Ah, okay. Yep. Yeah. So we're able to drive them the full length of the railway line into the riverbed.
Yes. Yeah. Okay.
So that will have about 20 at each end, from memory.
Excuse me, did you have permission to put this bridge up?
No. It was on, the permission that we had to put this up was from the family who owned the property.
Okay.
There was no resource consent, no plans, no nothing.
And it's still there today.
Highly illegal.
No.
Well, were there requirements then, though?
I have no idea. No one ever asked.
Yes.
Yeah. Is that bridge still standing?
It is. Yes. Yeah. It survived the 2004 flood.
Yeah.
And it survived, one before that in 1989, I think it was, which took out all the willows in our farm. I said one since then too, I can't remember, yes.
So
the road bridges in the valley, the one nearest the school, that got washed out. The one nearest our farm was either side of that bridge, that disappeared completely, and they had to use the ford and build a new bridge there. Mm-hmm.
That's the 2004?
Yes.
Flood.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Okay.
The one we built still stands to this day.
Well, I should have probably 20 of those railways.
Well, if it hadn't been for the railway lines, it wouldn't be there.
No.
How did you get these railway?
I bought them from...
You didn't just pick them up.
I don't know where they came from. you don't ask questions. They carried them to the up there on the trucks and... We unloaded them and then put the job.
Yeah. Okay. I'll just ask, because I've heard in some sort of farming communities, when there are a lot of small farms, you get, if something needed doing, the community are just right, they'd all get together for these joint projects. But you're involved more in the contracting side, the pattern here?
Or? In my father's day, haymaking was quite a community thing.
Yeah.
My father owned the tractor and the sweep, which gathered the hay up and took it to the stationary hay baler.
Okay.
The hay baler was owned by the Richardson family, and Murray Richardson was the man who fed the hay into the baler. Tom Richardson fed the wires in when the got to the end of its bale, etc.
Yeah.
And I can't remember, someone else on the other side, and they tied the knots in them, and the bale came out the back, and then they were stacked onto trailers and carted to the sheds.
Okay, yeah.
They had wooden chop things between the bales?
That's right, yes. And that's what they put the wires through. Do you know that?
Yes.
You got all rusty fingers.
Yes.
Yes. So, yeah, the wire was very rusty.
Mm. Yeah. So that was sort of communal effort.
Yes, that involved probably three or four farms and their staff.
Okay.
Yes.
Yep.
Most of them was only one person, sometimes two.
Mm. Yep. Okay. But
that happened. That they didn't only bale Richardson's hay, they built our hay, plus several of the neighbours around that close community, yes.
Yeah, okay. So, but then you were talking also about sort of contracting type.
Well, that was later.
Okay. It moved to that afterwards.
Well, after that, we had self-propelled balers. Balers that were towed behind tractors to pick up the hay off the ground and put it out to the baler, and a bale came out the back end of it mechanically.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So there was no manual labour involved there, but. The carriers at the time, the Richardson family devised a method of what they call sledging the hay. So behind the baler there was a wooden sledge that slid along the ground with a gap between four pieces of wood. And we stacked, I think it was 19 bales per sledge load, and they drove a peg into the ground and they slid the bales off the sledge onto the ground.
Okay.
And we did that round and round the paddock until we finished the baling.
Yeah.
The carriers liked it because they could drive alongside. We had them lined up like soldiers across the paddock. And the tracks could just walk and drive along quietly along these rows of bales and just chuck the bales straight onto the truck and then take them onto the sheds.
Yeah. Okay. And that was outside contractors coming in doing that? Or
we were outside contractors doing it, yes. Yeah. Yep.
Okay.
The cartage contractors were separate to our operation was.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay. So was there, what, was it the technology that made you move more towards a contracting structure, or was it the farms got larger and the few people? Or?
To be honest, it was their age that was starting to tell. It was hard work.
Okay, yeah.
And Bon, who was probably my senior to me by 10 years, he did most of the sledging.
Yeah.
And it was starting to tell on his body.
Yeah, okay.
They were
okay.
Big days.
And then you
took over, Mark. I didn't do as much as he did. I did quite a bit of sledging too.
Yeah. Was it a big social event though for the when they were all getting together to do that early on?
Not really. No.
No. You get the work done.
Bon would ring me the night before and tell me, just be at our place at 10 o'clock tomorrow morning, Morris, we're heading to wherever.
Okay.
Yep. Yeah. He'd say, I think we've got about X number of bales to bale and I'd arrive at his place. We're going to do the baling, come back at night. Sometimes on the Waitina Road, we'd have a tractor and a baler, a rake, and sometimes a trailer behind that.
Yeah.
And at Christmas time down, coming down the Waitina Road, they'd come out to three abreast in the dark.
Yeah.
It was dangerous as hell. And all we were doing was sitting on a tractor, tracking along at tractor speed.
Mm.
You couldn't do it today.
No.
Just impossible. You wouldn't survive.
Yeah.
They'd hit you. Yeah.
Yeah. They would, the trucks and things?
The traffic. Holiday makers.
Oh, okay.
That route was a good route from people from the Wairarapa and Southern Hawke's Bay to get to Taupo. That in the summertime, that was just maniac. And the road was up and down, no visibility of what was coming towards you or what was behind you. Yes.
Okay. So in the work generally, if there wasn't the sort of, now there's a very strong emphasis on health and safety, but were there many accidents?
Not that I remember, no.
So people were just more careful or?
I think you're probably right, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. We didn't do stupid things.
Yeah.
If you know what I mean, yes.
Yeah.
I've had a tractor out of control. Sort of running down the hillside with one wheel going forward, going backwards.
Right, hang on, Chris, what's the story? I heard the gasp.
Well, he was a very lucky boy. He had thing on behind he could drop to help stop the slide over.
Okay.
He was going right down and he got a roll, what they call a transport box, which you put hay in there on to take out to the animal, and he dropped it.
Okay, and that sort of anchored the...
Went backwards for a fence.
Saved himself. But he also did the same thing to my brother. He was helping him feed out. He went down over a bank and then the transport box was on the rakes. You know how you have
on a buck rake, it was called.
Buck rake. And it was sitting on it. Gets off down the paddock and turns around and finds out that it's not there. Oh. William's away up the top of the...
Left in there.
Would you be a liability?
Probably.
And also in the farm, you were dealing then still with dairy cattle and sheep?
No, the dairy cow thing ended because our dairy shed wasn't up to spec.
Okay.
And that's about the time that the Cheltenham Dairy Company closed down the dairy factory at Longbourn started up. That's before Fonterra days.
Yeah, okay. So then it was a time when they were moving to larger dairy herds and
small, and the cream thing, they didn't take cream in those later on in years. They wanted whole milk.
Yeah.
So they just put big tankers and took the whole everything away. And that was seen as that. So
it was a matter of putting all the new equipment that was needed or drop out.
And the dairy thing at the time wasn't that profitable. And sheep wool was... This is the wool boom times, you know. We've got £1 a pound
for this wool. Was your early Korean War
period? Yes.
Yeah.
So Well, basically, my parents, that was made, that forced them, well, allowed them to send me to boarding school, and my sister and my brother as well.
A pound
for all was huge.
Absolutely. So then the farm stayed on. So in your later days farming, it was all sheep farming?
Yes.
Yeah.
Still is today. Sheep and cattle, yes.
Okay.
I used to buy in 18-month steers and fatten them at 2.5, and that's over a 12-month period.
Yeah.
And we bred all our own lambs and replacement sheep.
What did you pay for your weaners?
I don't, Jane, but I'll tell you something. We had a... There were boom and bust times in the cattle market. And I bought cattle one year, and the bottom fell out of the beef market completely. And I thought, well, there's only one way to get out of this, Morris. You get rid of those cattle and you start in with a younger mob. So I sold all the 18-month cattle for what I could get, and I bought weaners. So that kept the numbers right, but it didn't cost me money. Well, not financially, bad money anyway. A lesson I learnt and haven't forgotten. Farming's like any business. You have ups and downs.
And you'd have gone through the, well, SMPs would have been quite significant for you, wouldn't they, in the early 80s? And then there were the reforms, when supplementary minimum prices, when they removed all those.
Yes.
So did that hit you hard, or you already owned the farm, I suppose?
I'll tell you the full story. When we got married, Chris and I'd been leasing half the farm from my father, and he said to me, would you like to buy that half of the farm? Which I agreed to, and we arrived at a price which we didn't discuss we couldn't discuss ourselves, because it was set by government standards. So we had a special government valuation, and Dad couldn't sell me the farm for less money than what they stated.
Okay.
And those were the rules, father to son.
So what time was it? What year was this?
67.
Okay.
Decimal currency.
Yeah.
So Chris and I got married in 67. We bought half a farm and built half a house. So things went easily. Chris didn't work. He helped me on the farm initially. And then when our children were born, the local headmaster approached her to see if she would drive the school bus from our place to Kiwitea School.
Okay.
Which she did for 18 years.
Mm-hmm.
That service still runs, and she also did a Tiawa run and a Bryce Road run as well. But that all varied. Some of the time was for the education department, who owned the buses, and some of it was privately contracted out. She worked for Badge Coach Lines for some of that time, and the education department for some of that time.
I like the education department because I got all the new buses.
No. Oh, yes, I'm sorry, yes.
Yes, yeah.
And I was to break them in.
Yeah, okay.
And then they would send them
break out. Them in. Was that you got to go slow because there was the running in time for the car?
Well, you had to be serviced, and the miles had to get up on them to see that everything was right.
Because
what they were wanting to do was send them out.
Yeah, the back country.
So that they would have to pay for them.
Because this is something that doesn't happen anymore. I remember when I was young in Britain, if you buy a brand new car, you got a sign in the back window, running in, please pass, and you got to go at a slow rate. Well, now you buy a new car and you
just go away. Mine was short distance running.
Yeah.
And I think that's why they wanted me to sort of have her a while and then I'd take them away.
Well, they had quite modern facilities on. They're all Toyota Hiaces. And they had electric opening doors and stuff. You pushed a button and these sorts of things that they had never perfected. So they were given to Chris to get the bugs out of them before they sent them to the back. You know, might have gone to Tire Happy or beyond somewhere. Who knows?
Yeah. Okay. So what was it like driving school buses? Was it a long day, a short day, up and down? You got all the long breaks in the middle?
You couldn't go socially to an awful lot. If you did, you have to leave because you had to be back in the afternoon to pick up the children at 3.
Now that suggests social activity was daytime.
Yes, sometimes.
So what sort of... just visiting friends for a coffee or so? Or women's Country Women's Institute or something?
Functions and things like
that. Okay.
I got you to drive the school bus. So I called Michael.
Well, that's another story too.
Yeah.
When this proposal came up from the principal of the school, three men in the valley had heavy traffic licences, so it wasn't a problem for them to get a passenger service license.
Mm.
All they had to do was transfer from HC to P class license.
Mm.
So three of us did that. Brian Eames, Bon Richardson and myself. Did John? Three of us initially anyway. And I continued with that until Chris gave it away in the finish. Now, every year we had to go and sit a passenger service license. Medical and then...
Nothing else, just a medical, that's right.
Which cost money.
Yeah.
Chris's was all paid for by the contractor or the education department. Mine and Brian Eames's and Brian Richardson's were mostly paid for by ourselves. And they got to over $100 per year for that.
Mm.
So it wasn't cheap. Anyway. Mm.
Nearly 300.
But
they wouldn't pay. Because she was. You were doing it regularly.
Chris had another. Colleen Richardson. She also got her license to drive as well. She didn't have an HC license either, so she had to get both done.
It was fun getting the lot. We had to drive a big. What was it?
Education bus.
No, it was the education board bus at Washington West. Along with the long
Bedford. About a 3-ton Bedford truck.
Yeah.
Was it hard, easy? Or?
Oh, it was fine.
You're all going forward, or there's no reversing to do?
Yes.
I had a traffic officer popped on with me. He was quite nice, really, and told me where to go. Because if you know Waituna West area and where the school is, so I came out the side road and there's a bridge there.
On your right.
Yeah, had to cross over a bridge and go up a hill like that and then go down straight. Well, Len Shannon had a whole lot of sheep on the right. Anyway, that was fine.
Yeah.
And I get up to his gateway and he's got this gateway that's got concrete sides to it like that and a cattle stop. And he said, pull up, please. Yes. He said, I want you to back into the gateway. And I went, okay. So I pulled up and said, I stopped and he jumped out of the bus and he had a look, got back in. He said, well done, now we'll go back.
How do you measure
sheep? I said, I've got to go back through those damn sheep again. Len Shannon's going to get a telling off from me. And he was, Len knew what was going on and he thought it was hilarious. He laughed his head off. Anyway, I got through there and pulled up and I just said to him, well, how did I do it? He said, you talk to your passenger too much. I said, you asked the questions. And I told you to stop telling me about the changes.
Yeah.
So he was galling me. That was fun. He was quite lovely.
Yeah.
But did you have to double declutch in the Bedford?
No.
Only
Loads of second.
Yeah,
Loads
of second. But the other ones were automatic, so
we'll
just
shift,
like driving a car. Yeah. But
the double declutching always amused me.
Yeah.
I still
do it with vintage cars.
You do? You have to.
Of course
you have to.
So what were the pupils like on the bus? They all behaved themselves.
They all called her Auntie Chris.
They were all of the school kids.
And still do.
And they still call me Auntie Chris when they see me. They were pretty well behaved. There's the one or two that, the funniest one I have to say, but I won't mention any names, was I pulled up a stop and on my right, the house that the child was coming out of was on my right. And I looked over and here's Dad running round and round and round the paddock trying to catch him. It was like a little eel, couldn't catch him, and finally caught him. So I called out, it's okay, I'll open the door, chuck him in and we'll I'll take off. You'll have to, you know, anyway. When I got that sword and I said to Simon, he's our son, sitting in the front seat, and I said, hold the leather strap because I don't want him trying to open the door. I mean, it was quite dangerous what I had to do. And anyway, he got in there and he sort of like this, and I took off quick and he sort of sat down. I said, now, get up and get into the back seat, please. And he took off down there. So that was one incident. Mm-hmm. And he was only little. And when I got to school, I said to him, I want you to stay behind. Anyway, he's still behind. He's all scared now. And I said to him, now, that was silly. It wasn't fair on Dad. You know you've got to go to school. I know you've only been going for one day and you don't think you don't need to go anymore.
Been there, didn't want to do it anymore.
And I said, I've been but you do need to go. And I said, I'm going to take you in and we'll have a wee talk with it. He thought, if I do it the right way, well, I never had it. My theory with all of them was if they got too noisy, things were going on, I always took a magazine with me. And I'd pull up in a farm gateway and sit, not say anything, pick up the magazine and you hear them saying, what's she doing? Why are we sitting here? What's she doing? And it all goes quiet. And then I would say, right, are we ready to go on now? And I said, when you get to your stops, you'll be able to tell your parents that you were so noisy, Mrs. Entwistle couldn't drive anymore. I wasn't going to use Auntie Chris. I was Mrs. Entwistle. And I never had any. They all knew if I pulled over like that, that they. No, it was a good discipline. It was.
Okay. Thank you for listening to Manawatu Conversations. Today we've been talking with Maurice and Chris Entwistle. I think there's going to be some more next week.
Thank you for listening to Manawatu Conversations. This and other recent programs can also be found on the Manawatu People's Radio website, and a range of programs is also available on the Manawatu Heritage website of the Palmerston North City Archive. The address for that is manawatuheritage.pncc.govt.nz.
If you enjoy this NPR podcast, please consider subscribing. Our podcasts are available on all major podcasting platforms, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify, as well as the accessmedia.nz app. Support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.npr.nz/donate.